best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I am short.
Big O! Showtime!
I use the bathroom.
You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the stream link, go direct to DLNTS.org. And the IRC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1015, starring Joel McLaughlin.
Hello.
And Joe.
Yep, that's me.
And Murph.
Hey there.
I didn't know if you wanted me to say your last name, Joe, or Murph. I don't know if you like to keep that private. I apologize. This is episode 1015. Just to update everybody, we finished our migration to Cloud Run, and it went smoothly. Except there's still a couple of issues that are kind of confusing to us, which we're not. The Google documentation does not help. Surprisingly, the documentation got us all the way to where we are. Little confusing, but ultimately we followed it. We did the terraform, and now we're up and running and happy. The issue now is the load balancer, which we set up, and it's a little confusing, that load balancer, because it isn't a single entity. It is a collection of configurations, which you're like, okay, yeah, that kind of makes sense, because it's an IP address that you have to acquire. And this is all done in Terraform. So you get an IP address, and then you assign that IP address to a,
an endpoint?
It's not an endpoint. It is, let's go the other way. So you have your backends, and those backends are part of a network group, okay? So each network group has one or more backends, and typically it's like one service is a network group. So, for instance, our search application is a one service. We had it running in East and West, and that is a network group with two backends associated with it, right? And then that network group, well, there's two backends, and then those two backends get associated with a network group, and then those network groups get associated with a URL map. And then there is the URL map is associated with a redirect rule, which is associated with the IP address. So it's not like you have this single entity that's the load balancer. It is just a collection of configurations that kind of come together as a load balancer. Now, what we had, so there's two redirect rules. There is the HTTPS, which goes to the URL map. And then there's...
Just go away?
Who, me? Did I just go away?
I can hear you just fine, Dan.
Oh, okay. So there's the incoming HTTPS goes to the URL map. But any call going to HTTP gets redirected to the HTTPS redirect, which goes to the URL map, which goes to the back end through the network group. Now, our original intent was kind of to have it similar to the way we have it in GKE right now, in that we had an east and a west environment. And ideally, what we wanted to have happen originally, even when we had it in Fastly, but it didn't seem to quite work out this way, is we wanted to have it direct traffic based on region, geolocation. So if you're coming in from the west, you would get directed to the west cluster, because ideally it's closer to you, so it should be a little faster. And if you're coming in from the east, that way. And when we had that issue a couple weeks ago with the person that was in New Zealand, and I don't know if I ever said what that issue was, but what it came down to is that our health checks, which is what the Fastly shields and pops would ping the backends to make sure that they're active. And if they weren't, it switches to the other region. And if that's not active or healthy, then it says you can't go this route. It gives you an error message. But what was happening was when they were just far enough, when you're out there in New Zealand, Australia, Tokyo, it was just far enough and our health checks were a little too aggressive that the timeout was way too low, and it was checking, I think it was like a half a second timeout and checking every 10 seconds. So what was happening was, if you're in the east, not a problem. If you're in the west, not, if you're anywhere in the United States, it generally wasn't a problem. But when you got off further and further away, the shields out there and the pops were basically saying, it's not passing the health check, these back ends are down, and throwing the error message. So when we increased those values, we set the timeout to 10 seconds, and we set the interval for checking to be a minute, which is kind of what the other branches or company are using. Then the problem went away and it was fine. Well, in testing with that, it kind of revealed that even when we thought we were doing regional load balancing in traffic direction in Fastly, it didn't seem to be turning out that way, because we were still always getting, no matter where we were coming in from, the east region. So when we switched over to Google, we were under the impression that the Google load balancer was going to direct traffic based upon which region you were coming from. We weren't clear on how that would work, but that was the impression we got from the documentation, which did not pan out at all. Because what had happened was, even though we had two backends for the service, for each service in east and west, if we took the east backend down, the load balancer reported that path as being inaccessible. So Fastly would report that it was down, even though west was still working just fine. It like wouldn't redirect traffic over to the west. So we weren't quite clear what we were missing in regards to that. And we thought we had to do health checks, okay? And health checks on top of that were another level of confusion, because you can only apply a certain kind of health check to a specific kind of load balancer type, and these Terraform resources could apply, the backend is where I guess you apply the health check, but that backend, when you're creating the health check, could be applied to one or more different load balancer types. So it really wasn't clear which health probe or check we were supposed to use. And then come to find out that if we wanted to do that regional load balancing, it seemed to be something that had not been implemented in the stable release, and it really wasn't even in beta or alpha, that it was in like this pre-alpha release, and they were still working on it. So that was under a level of uncertainty, at which point we decided, you know, if it's not doing the load balancing and we're concerned about what happens if a region goes down, since we're in Google, if a, you know, the likelihood of an entire region going down is pretty small. And this is more of the product for internal use than it is for what the rest of the world would use on visiting a newspaper's website. It's primarily for the reporters and editors and everything for managing the content. We decided that for now, we're just going to go with U.S. Central and be done with it. And then later, once they get all that stuff maybe into non-development status or ready for prime time, we'll see if we want to do that load balancing. Now, we have it set up that if there was a problem in U.S. Central and the region was down, that we could just redeploy all the applications to another region and switch the load balancer to point to those over there. It would take about a half an hour of work to do, mainly because it's not a fast process when you deploy these things. It can take about 5 to 10 minutes in some cases, depending on how large the application is, because it takes the repository, you push it, copy up into the Google source, and then it builds the container from there and then puts the container up and makes it available. So there was that. Now, what we did learn today, which was kind of frustrating, is that if you have a in your network group where you're defining your the backends, and each backend is defined, if you have that backend associated to a network group, it would not allow us to remove, like, when we wanted to switch over our staging environment to just US Central, and we had already deployed the applications out to US Central, when we wanted to switch that over, we thought we could just go in and change the backends to just point to US Central instead of US East and US West. So what it did was the Terraform application attempted, before it created the US Central backend, it attempted to delete the US East and West backends, but they were already associated to the network group, so it kept erroring out saying, we can't delete a backend that's associated, it's already in use by the network group. So it wasn't kind of smart enough to do that. So it had to be a two-step process where we removed, I think what I did was I removed the backends from all the network groups, and then in the next stage created the US, you removed the US East and West, replaced it with US Central, and that allowed it to go through and delete the East and West from the network group, add the US Central to the network group, and then to the back end, and then add it to the network group. Now, all of this happened right in the middle of GitHub having an outage yesterday where they were unable to process webhooks for a few hours. And then sometime around, I think it was 2:30 p.m., they said the issue was resolved, but there was a three-hour backlog of webhooks that they had to go through. So any other webhooks that were in play would have a significant delay up to about 3 hours. And apparently we use Scalar for applying the Terraform into the Google GCP. That operates on webhooks to GitHub. So even though the repository and all the Terraform files were updated, they were not visible to Scalar, which was consuming that through a webhook. So what ended up happening is we went out and deleted the backends, and then we ended up with an hour wait before we could recreate them, which was annoying. And luckily, we hadn't moved production over to do this, so we're working all this through our staging and development environments before we move production over, but we're thinking about moving production over next week. Oh, and another thing. Oh, this was an ass-chapping and a half. The finally got approval to go to production with the upgrade of our WordPress VIP environment to 6.22. Now they just came out with 6.3, I think, a couple weeks ago. But we're finally getting 6.2 in. So I was running through the process of getting that in our development environment and our production environment, and it was not working at all. And I was really frosted about it. So come to find out that, and this is a thing that we're trying to figure out how we're going to fix, but right now we do not have a fix for it. Unfortunately, the complexity of how we're managing this GitHub repo that is provided to us through VIP has created a situation where we have three main branches: our development, our staging, and the main branches are production. Development is done against the development branch, and then when a feature or a bug needs to be worked on, it is a branch off of development. And when that's merged into development, what they were doing was cherry picking that SHA into staging, and then when that was okay, cherry picking again that original SHA into main, which after a couple years of doing this has resulted in development and staging and main being a bit out of sync. So what I tried to do on Monday was, after I had exhausted everything I could think of, I created a branch in off of main, and I took a branch from staging, and I rebased staging into that main branch. And then for the rest of the day, had to go through every single commit that was made in staging and resolve conflicts against the main branch that I had checked out. So it ended up in me having to edit the same files repeatedly for every commit. And it was just such a pain in the ass to do. It took all day to do it. It was really frustrating and aggravating. And even all the way at the end of it, when I was done, I still had some issues, to which I was like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to go and start copying everything from the staging branch now over top, and this is what we want. And I found out that there were like 9 files still that were out of sync than what we had in our staging branch. But once I had completed that, it was good. It was working. And so far, it seems like everything's good, and hopefully we may move forward on it. And at some point, I'll probably talk about what we're looking at to how to fix this issue, but it's kind of a complicated mess. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
As it usually is in the cloud.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a mess of our own making in some regards, and what kind of complicates the issue here is that we have, like I said, three different branches, and each of those branches have a branch off of them like development, and then there's development built, and there's staging and staging dash built, and main, which is main dash built. And the way that the VIP operates is your development branch is what is then your development environment that you would hit, and your staging branch is what you use for your staging environment. So when you commit into development, it then automatically pushes that chain, those, that development branch right into development built through Circle CI, which then is available to you out there on the web. And the same thing with staging. So we typically have, like in our current process with our other applications, with our containerized applications, we have one main branch that we work from. And then when somebody merges in a commit to that main, to that branch, it creates a container. And that container gets pushed to our development environment, gets pushed to our staging environment. And when we're ready, we push it to our production environment. And the other difference is with our functions, that the Google Cloud functions, it's one, again, one branch, the main branch. When we commit into the main branch, it automatically gets pushed up to Google, to our development environment in Google, and then to our development environment in staging, and to our, when we're ready, we manually push it to production. The thing that complicates what we're trying to do in VIP is that this is all separate GitHub branches, and it's... Circle CI doesn't have an easy way for us to gatekeep. Like on the GitHub Actions side, we can, for our containers, we have a workflow that we manually kick off that says deploy this container, or we have a workflow that says now deploy this function to production. But on the Circle CI side, you can't do that. It only operates on commits to your repository, and you can filter stuff out by branch, which is kind of how we have it now. So if you're committing into development or to staging or to main, it only works on that branch, whereas we're trying to figure out how we can move towards a single branch that manages to commit to the development, to push development build, to stage, to push the stage build, and then we need to gatekeep production, right? But anyway, I don't want to get too deep in it because it's a kind of a mess right now, and there's other people deserve to talk more than me, like Joe and Joel and Murphy Boy.
That sounds yes. Very similar to my week. So... I've been taking on a bit more responsibility at work because, you know, now I have two managers, and one of them's a personnel manager and one of them's a tech manager. My tech manager, unlike my previous one, doesn't work directly with us. So I've been handling all of the tech stuff. And I found out that we're also supposed to be having a migration to a cloud server. Pretty standard Unix migration, and no one knows what to do because we haven't done it to any of these cloud servers before, and everybody is pointing the finger at who else's problem it is. You know, nobody wants to say, oh, I need to do this. Everybody wants to say, oh, somebody else needs to do this. And so what's my job when that happens? To get all these finger pointers into the same meeting at the same time so we can actually figure out what's going on. Because a lot of them are pointing the finger at support and saying, support, you need to figure out what applications are installed on this server and then make sure that they're installed and have the same versions on the new server. And you explain to them, well, this particular support team doesn't have sudo permissions on those servers, and so we can't actually install any applications. But they don't want to hear it. They just want it done. And then they won't actually tell us which paths need copied from the old server to the new server, and they won't give us access to the accounts that can actually, you know, read from the one server and write to the new server. And they won't even tell us which accounts and what file permissions need to be set up on the new server, which we need before we can get started, because you know what we also can't do with the elevated permissions that we do have? Create root folders.
Yeah.
So I can't create these root folders. I don't own these folders, so I can't change the permissions on the folders. You won't tell me what needs to be copied. You won't tell me what applications I need to yell at the Unix team to install. The Unix team is saying that it's not them that's supposed to be doing anything. I can't. So I set up two meetings. I set up two meetings because I knew there were going to be issues. I set up a 7 a.m. meeting just in case there was anybody in the APAC region or the EMEA region that needed to jump on and say something. And then I set up another meeting during the U.S. hours with everybody included. Everybody that said it was somebody else's problem. Everybody that said this needs to get done right now. Everybody. All right. Invited to this meeting. You know how many people attended both meetings?
Two. Nobody.
My team. That was it.
Yeah. God, so, that sounds so familiar.
It's really important that all of this gets done, but none of the stakeholders actually want to be involved in making it happen. Except for one. I have one guy that's working towards getting his stuff copied over, which is the only reason I know anything about what's going on with any of these. But his problem is that when the Unix team created his folders, they did it with another team's permissions. So guess what I can't do?
Work.
Copy anything from the old server to the new server because the roles that we have do not have permissions there.
Yeah.
But hey, I've got less than 2 weeks to figure this out.
Yep. Mine's not near as bad, but this morning we use FortiGate, right, for our VPN to get into our cloud instances and all that stuff, right? FortiGate itself is a cloud VPN, right? Well, they decided to make some upgrades to it as of this morning, all right? Not one of my team, who are the first responders, could get into VPN. Not one of us. All right? So, while this is all going on, my coworker, the one whose wife has cancer, lost power, plus she fell and might have hurt her, like, broke her leg maybe, and also hit her incision from where she just had her surgery. So he's gone for the day. He happens to be the on-call person. So I'm like one of the first ones on the team to get the VPN fixed, right? So the other guy said, oh, I'll take on call, but then he can't get into anything, so guess who went on call for a few hours?
You?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was nice of you. Right.
Yeah, and then I get two tickets. One of them was it was a synthetic test that failed. One of them is, and the whole reason it failed was because the temp space on the server filled. The other team, the engineers, got the alert. And it took them a while to figure out, well, somebody's I'm like, you can't just delete shit out of temp. Somebody's running something to cause that large file to be there. You got to figure out what process that is. You know, never mind the fact that, you know, I'm no longer on that team, but, you know, they're the ones handling it. So, anyway. So she squares that out way, and then my synthetic test cleared. And I'm like, because I'm like, well, is it this? Is it that? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, fine. I want to sit this alone because the other one was and this is kind of an annoying thing, especially if you have a domain controller that uses self-signed certificates. After directory, and I don't know if this is a default, but the client had their Active Directory so that it automatically renews the self-signed SSL cert that's on port 636 for AD, which is what our application uses to push users into their Active Directory. Okay, so the solution is I have to get the root cert from the domain and drop it in a specific folder. And 9 times out of 10, well, I don't know if it's not. I'm just wondering if we had a change in our product, but I dropped it in there. It didn't. You know, usually it just starts working. I can make connections to their LDAP server and it works, right? This time I didn't. So I started brainstorming, trying to figure out what the hell it could be. And I actually grabbed the client through Monocall just to make sure they gave me the right fucking cert, right? You know, because they're not going to know which one. So we tried a couple different certs. Then I finally said, well, it shouldn't need this, but let's try this. And I went and made sure that any of their apps that were still up and running and still working. The only thing that was not working was password changes and creating new users. All right, because both those have to happen over an SSL connection. Plus, it uses their own IDP, so it's not even hitting the server for authentications. Okay, so I said, let's try this. I went and figured out if the two applications that we have now, because we got rid of one, we're using the port for this one listener, and neither one of them was. I said, let's do this. Let's stop and start that listener and see what happens. And I did that, and bam, it started working. And I'm like, and this was at 5 o'clock. So that was my whole day, with half of it spending time trying to figure out why the hell that our FortiGate didn't work. We had to FortiGate. We had to upgrade our clients, and then they're using EMS to manage it. So basically, all the different profiles are going to come from a central location, right? Well, I installed the client first. It didn't have that server address in there or a key, because it was asking for a server address or a key. We didn't have documentation telling us what to put in the field, all right? All that stuff, the PDF document says just select the profile and connect, and it's like, I don't have no profiles. So I uninstalled and reinstalled FortiGate about 3 different times on my Mac, and then I finally got to work. And then we find out half a team didn't have what they needed in the AD side of things on our corporate network in order for them to be able to sign in with the VPN. So that was what caused me to do the on-call. Other than that, yeah, it could have been worse. There could have been a lot more issues coming in. But, yeah, so I'm going to talk with I don't know if he's in the rest of the week, but I'm going to try and talk him with their service delivery manager and say, hey, put something in your plan on renewing this cert next year so we don't have to do it on the fly. So, and I got to write that change up tomorrow morning too. But good for me, I actually put meat into the crock pot tonight, or this morning I should say, for dinner. So we had a good dinner tonight. Hot roast beef sandwich is what made with homemade mashed potatoes. And the only reason I made them homemade is because I can't find the freaking instant mashed potatoes, the good ones. When you do find them, they're usually individual servings now, which is strange. The latest supply shortage, I guess.
Wait, what is it? Supply,
instant mashed potatoes, or dehydrated potatoes, essentially. Which I usually keep a box of those because they're easy to whip up really quick, you know, for a few minutes. I don't have to boil water, you know, because I just do it in the microwave.
Okay. Throw some sour cream in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they get a bad rap because they're instant, but it's really just potatoes. There's really nothing else in them, generally. I mean, you can get
flaked
them that
and dried.
Way. Right. So, I mean, you can get them that way, but...
You know what? Why didn't you just make mashed potatoes from potatoes?
That's what I did.
Oh,
well,
there
did.
You go.
Could have cooked them just a hair longer because they're fairly lumpy, but I don't care. Lumps,
you know,
don't
what?
Bother me.
I got to admit something. For some reason, I do like instant mashed potatoes. I don't know why. I find that they taste good.
I do too.
I mean, I'd never make them. Like, sometimes
generally,
the kids get them and make them. But I usually just make mashed potatoes from potatoes. But
I mean, it's not massively hard. I mean, you do got to peel the potatoes, you know, but which it's not too bad because I got a decent peeler. I don't got one of those thin metal ones like my mom used to have. I've got an OXO one, and it peels the potatoes pretty darn quick. And I just peel them right into my where my garbage disposal is and put them down there usually. Because I don't have a place to put compost or anything like that here. I don't think the HOA would approve if I put something up my backyard to compost. But that's one thing. And that's one thing. I don't even have a recipe for it. I just buy a roast and I put it in the crock pot with some pepper. And I started using that mushroom ketchup in it, which is not – it's a mushroom ketchup, but it's not thick like a tomato ketchup. It's very thin, like a Worcestershire sauce. In fact, it has tastes similar to Worcestershire sauce. Some places even call that vegan Worcestershire sauce because there's no anchovies in it.
Wait, what? I'm sorry. I had to step away for a second because my dog was barking. What is vegan Worcestershire sauce?
Mushroom ketchup, essentially. It tastes very similar. Yep. And very similar and very it's got the same consistency as Worcestershire sauce, too. But it doesn't have anchovies in it, which is that's what gives Worcestershire its unique flavor, is the anchovies. I love Worcestershire, but ironically, I won't eat anchovies on a pizza.
You know what?
Never ordered it that way.
I'll tell you what, Joel. I'll tell you what.
I might like it, actually.
I kind of a little bit agree with you there. I really like Worcestershire sauce. I like fish sauce. I'm not a big fan of anchovies, but I've been eating them more and more, and I'm getting more accustomed to it.
Right.
But for some reason, like, I love seafood. I love all seafood. But when you put it in a can with, like, oil, I don't know, something happens to it, and I'm just like, no thank you.
it's like when you buy tuna fish in a can, you don't buy the tuna fish with the oil in it, you buy the water one.
Well, right. I prefer like the sardines. Tuna fish with the oil in it. But for some reason, like, tinned fish and tinned mussels and tinned whatever, aside from tuna fish, I'm not a big fan. I like, it has some kind of, like, weird flavor to it that just turns me off. I'm sorry, Joe, I didn't mean to cut
you
off.
It's like the, they use a type of vinegar for a bit of brining.
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes it taste really horrible, especially tuna fish. But no, like even with sardines, I'll only get the ones that are in water, and it's just because they taste better.
Now my wife, on like the other hand, will eat the shit out of all that stuff, and I'm like,
she can
she's
have
Swedish.
It.
Yeah, you can have your pickled herring.
Oh, she's Swedish. Has she ever tried surströmming?
What is that? The fermented.
Jar? Just look it up.
Sounds like
just
a weird
look
sex
it up.
Act.
Yeah, no, she. I don't think she's ever had it. I don't think you can get that anywhere outside of Sweden. and I'm the
you
only
can.
One. Who, I wasn't in Sweden. But.
You can get it. It says sour. It's that is Swedish for sour herring. So it's fermented herring.
She, you know what? She may have had it, and she probably would like it. I don't know. I'll have to ask her. I thought you were talking about that that, what is it? They take the fish and they throw lime on it and put it in a hole for a while and they dig it up and eat
it. That's Thai, I thought, isn't it?
Swedish. There's something they do in Switzerland with that. What is the name? I'll find out the name of it.
Just look it up on YouTube and you'll see what I mean. In Sweden, when they, you know, the YouTube videos all show them opening the can, like you normally open a can, right? But in Sweden, they usually open it under water because it smells so bad if you open it. It's basically under pressure, and when you hit that can opener, it goes.
Okay, I'm thinking
of. It stinks.
I'm thinking of the fermented shark from Hakari.
Yeah.
Hack Girl or whatever it is. From
my dad loves sardines. Iceland. I never cared for them. I probably try it. But. And then my other.
Sardines in water.
Yeah. I also like calamari.
I love them.
Calamari's delicious too. Squeeze! Although you can't. If you go to OLF, you cannot go to BD Mongolian and get some squid in your stir fry because it's gone.
Because BD Mongolia is gone, isn't the whole franchise gone or just in,
it is
in Ohio?
No, just I will that say location. If, I think there's other ones.
And you know, BD Mongolian is great, but man, what is that? What is that place down there? The market.
North Market, yeah.
Yeah, oh my goodness. The stuff in North Market is phenomenal. And that Greek place was really good, too.
It
really
all good. Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? And I was driving through there the other week and trying to figure out if Happy Greek was there, and I don't think it might. I have to look. It may not be anymore.
Wouldn't a Google search
Which
show
would
you that?
Be very unfortunate, because it's delicious. It will.
Well, the Happy Greek Restaurant and Pub website is still taking reservations.
Let's see. Yep, okay, it's still there. I just didn't see the sign.
Good news, huh?
Very possible. Very possible. But I will tell you one thing that is in the Arena District that's not the North Market that you might want to try.
White Castle?
Rodizio Grill, Brazilian Steakhouse.
Oh, no, man.
Rodizio Grill. Brazilian Steakhouse.
Have you ever
been
there?
You know that stuff. Not to that. I wasn't to that. There was another chain that does that Brazilian barbecue. What is the other one?
There's a couple of them. Brasaro. I think Brasaro.
It was in Orlando. No. I'm trying to remember the name of that one.
I don't know, man. Brazilian Steakhouse.
So much meat.
It's so good.
Texas
but I come out of there
Brazil,
like,
I think it was.
Oh my God. You just eat too much. We took
Definitely.
My daughter
well,
to one.
Well, because it's like, they'll bring like, the one I went to, like, would bring out the meat on a sword, and they're like, do you want to have some of this meat? And I'm like, yeah.
It is so good.
Yeah, it's definitely good. It was now Fogo de Chao. I don't remember. It had to be Texas Day Brazil, I think. That's the other chain that I know of that does it like that way. But, you know, it's like, you know, they bring, like, the one I went to also had, like, sausage. They bring out a sword full of sausage. But yeah, it's definitely a place. If you've not tried it and you're in the air, well, that's actually a little nice. Nationwide Arena is a little further away from the Hilton, which is where it is now. It's not at the Hyatt this year. It's at or it wasn't there last year. It's at the Hilton Columbus downtown. The Hyatt, and Hilton is basically a brand new hotel that they built. So, let's see.
That's in
Buca
weeks,
the
Beppa
is still down there.
That's in 3 weeks, right?
But then poor Murph doesn't know if he's presenting yet.
What can you do? They pushed it back this year, so it's in September.
You pushed it up. Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be December.
You know what?
It was December last year.
What kind of stinks about that is like, yeah, it's only like 3 weeks away, and it would be nice to know. You know what I mean? Like, if you were only going to go if you were presenting, it doesn't give you a lot of opportunity.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, to me, part of one of the reasons why you want to go is that someone you know is presenting or a subject that, you know, so it's like you got 3 weeks to decide and you don't know yet.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're going to announce soon, though, so.
Yeah. Luckily for me, I live here, but that's also a pain in the ass, too, because my family's like, why aren't you here? When are you coming home?
So we go back to the old dilemma of this is too convenient for you, having a convention in town is no good?
No, my family assumes if I'm sleeping in the house, I have to be here. So
I wish I had a convention in my backyard.
Yeah, but your wife would just let you go, and I know she would.
She'd be like, why are you home? You should be there.
But,
good day.
You should be there.
It's okay. Once I go through, you know, I don't go much past 5 anymore, and, you know, because I don't drink, so there's no reason for me to be at the after party or the pre-party.
To hang out with people.
Other than to hang out with people. Hang out with people, but it's like I can't. But see, the only person I know that's probably going this year is Murph. Maybe. I haven't heard what's her name? Amber Grainer. I don't know if she's going this year or not. I know she doesn't have the same job she had last year. But see, and that's the other thing too. Anytime I want to go to North Market, I can go. And so it's like, you know, North Market has a new vendor this year, a donut one, Buckeye Donuts. And they're pretty good. There's one not far from my old house. What's that beep?
Oh, sorry, it was.
Are you compiling a kernel again?
No, I'm not compiling a kernel.
I'm just messing. Yeah. That's the other thing too. Just to the north, and you can look this up, just to the north of that section of downtown is the Short North, and that's where they've been having, there's been a lot of gun violence in that area recently. So, nothing lately, so that's a good thing that maybe they figured out what was causing all the issues, but. But, yeah, I'll probably mosey on down for a little bit on Saturday. And see, that's the other sucky thing about it being September is that two of the things, my wife don't get a choice. That's the coffee thing and my work trip. So.
Weren't you like starting a coffee business a couple of years ago?
Me? No.
No.
I'd like to.
Should.
Yeah, especially since Grove City, it doesn't, I mean, Grove City, let's see. There is a, like, mom and pop coffee place, but it's all the way over on Broadway, basically the opposite side of town of me. So the closest, and I'm prefacing this as it's better than going to a McDonald's to get a cup of coffee, okay? The only place that's like that in Grove City is Starbucks. We have 1, 2, 3, 5 of them all in Grove City, and all with like probably less than a mile apart from each other. There's a drive-through only. Well, it's not drive-through only, but in Parkway Center. Then right across the street, there's one in the Target, and then down the street by Giant Eagle, there's a drive-through only one. Then there's one in the Kroger's that's on Stringtown Road, and a mile the other direction, there's one in the Kroger's on Hoover Road. So it's like all these stupid Starbucks. You know, that's the best I can do. It's a good thing I'm okay with them, you know. Because you're going to pay. A lot of people say, well, Starbucks costs too much. I'm like, if you go to any decent cafe, you're going to pay that much. Maybe more, depending on what it is. So.
Well, I kind of have to agree that Starbucks right. does cost too much, and most of your cafes cost too much, too. But right. It also reminds me that I need to cold brew some coffee tonight, so tomorrow during right. my day off, I can make myself a Frappuccino ooh, that I ooh. Actually want to drink.
You know what I want to do, Joe? I have a cold brew maker, but it's the Dorothy one. I kind of want to get a real one.
Look, I have bag filters. They're literally bags right. that are filters.
Oh, yeah.
And you
yeah,
drop
I know what you mean.
Them into the pitcher.
Yep.
You fill the pitcher up with water, and that cold brews it.
Right. But the other thing I want is, I saw it on Amazon, there is a nitro injection kit for coffee. It's like a nitro cold brew.
Yeah.
Which is delicious. Oh, my God.
Yeah. The nitros are pretty good. I'm not going to
yeah,
lie.
Yeah, very smooth. Even the Starbucks one is very smooth.
But, oh. I'm going to have me some nice Frappuccino tomorrow.
There you go. But yeah, the nitro kit is like $150, not counting the nitrogen cartridges you need.
I think I paid like $3 for the pitcher and yep, like yep. $5 for 100 of those filter bags.
Oh, straight old cold brew is great.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
I'm not going to pay for the nitro right now.
Oh, I'm with you. It's gadgety enough I'm interested in it.
Yeah. Another thing that I like to do when I'm going through a phase of, you know, making Frappuccinos, which is a really good idea,
right.
It's going to be 100 again tomorrow, 105 again tomorrow.
Right.
I will cold brew the coffee, and then I will freeze it into giant ice cubes, and then
there
use
you
that
go.
To make the Frappuccino.
There you go.
Oh, it's supposed to be. Jackie says it's supposed to be 106 tomorrow.
I'm sorry.
And then 108 the next day. And then 106 and 106 and 103.
You don't want to know what it is here, but it's been raining a lot.
You're right, I don't want to know. 69
degrees. 69 degrees right now.
It cooled off here. It was cool. Day before yesterday, today, and yesterday. So, yeah, today it got up to all of 94, but it did get down into the 60s. 60s overnight. 64 overnight.
That's comfortable.
which you're, you know, I like, because I worked from home yesterday, so I was able to work from my garage. I was able to get my 3D printer up and running. I was able to lift a crap ton of weights. I was even able to get it wasn't a full 10-mile bike ride like I usually do, but I was able to get a 5-mile bike ride in because I'm a bit out of practice right now. But, yeah.
Let's see, it's not going to be above 90 from now until next Friday. The warmest it's going to be is 89 on Monday.
No, it's back up into the hundreds again. And hopefully it doesn't do it for another 4 freaking weeks this time. Or how long was it that it was in the hundreds? It was over 30 days that it was over 100 degrees every day. And that's a big nope for me. And we had the longest period over 80 degrees on record.
Which sucks. Well, Murph, where Murph sat, though, it's been, I'd say, fairly comfortable, I think, right, Murph?
Oh, yeah, it's been very pleasant lately.
Yep. And no Canadian freaking wildfire smoke. We were getting hit with it pretty hard for about a month.
Yeah, but I know a lot of my New York coworkers were getting hit with it pretty hard. The air quality was just garbage.
It was atrocious. And I even a couple of those days where we had the bad air quality, I decided to go out for a walk outside. That was stupid.
Well, you got to just, you know, wear some nasal filters or something.
Yeah. But
taken to doing that so I can, you know, take less antihistamines.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Less antihistamines always good, especially when you get to be our age.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got some eardrops right now. I got this, it's mostly done, but it just got to the point now where I couldn't stand to have my earbuds in because it was so sore. So, our company has a deal with a SiriusMD for Teladoc kind of things. So basically the only thing I ever use it for is things like, I am sick, I don't feel good, I need medicine, I know what I want, this is what I want, kind of deal. Or something similar. I don't care if it's exactly that. You know, so the guy had me, this SiriusMD is all via a chat, via an app on your phone, and they have you take a couple pictures of your ear, and that's it. He calls the prescription in to Walgreens. I got it for $10. And I got some eardrops for the next, I think, 5-7 days, I think, somewhere around there. But that's really important, too, because I get really bad, like, when I fly, if I don't, there's these things called earplanes that you can use when you fly that help equalize the pressure in your ears. If I don't have those, when I land, I usually can't hear well the next 2 days. Because whatever is in my sinuses will migrate to my ear tubes. So those earplanes are awesome because basically I put them in before takeoff. When we get to flight level, I can take them out. And then we get ready to land, I can put them back in. But it's only an hour flight or so from here to Dulles, so it's not a big deal. Not even worth loading stuff up on my iPad to watch for that flight. They may not even have beverage service either. But I'll probably grab a coffee at Columbus Airport, and then after I land, I'll grab another coffee before I go grab the rental car. And then I'm going to go to the Edward Hazy building of the National Air and Space Museum so I can go see the Discovery. I've been there before. Yeah, I've been there before, but when I was there the last time, Enterprise was in there. So it'd be kind of cool to see the one that's actually been in space. They have a Concorde as well. I'm trying to remember. I thought they had an Air Force One, but I might be confusing it with the Air Force Museum, which is in Dayton.
which they do have an Air Force One there. They have Kennedy's Air Force Ones out there, which is a Boeing 707. So, actually, they have two Air Force Ones. They have the 707 of Kennedy's, and there was a prop plane that I believe was Nixon's, maybe? No. I can't remember. Maybe it was FDR. I can't remember. But they also have an F-22 out in the, you know, and an F-117 at the Air Force Museum. The stealth fighter. Or bomber, which is really what it was. Fighter bomber. So, yeah, there's that. And one of our sessions is at George Washington University, I think. Down in D.C., so I hope we just ride the metro to get there. At least I can do that now. Last time I was to this area of the D.C. area, there was not a metro rail station in Reston. There is now. It's literally right across from the corporate headquarters. And unlike other cities, Washington's metro is fairly clean, fairly safe.
And easy to use.
It is, really, actually.
When I go up to corporate... Yeah,
It's my favorite rapid transit system.
Yeah, when I go up to corporate... if I'm not driving, like if I take the train in or something, I'll hop on the metro when I get there. It's really convenient. It's only like not even a mile from the office, where it drops off. It's a little confusing at first if you've never used it before, because there's like what, three or four different lines,
right.
Depending on where you are. You have to make sure that if you need to go from one line to the other, you know, you just got to be aware of that. Because I think what, there's a silver and an orange.
Yep.
Yeah.
And an orange. And a red and a blue. Yep.
And
I was there.
You just have to get
that
card.
When I was there. Yes. Yes, you can get them right at the station too. There's also a green line. The green line goes out towards Maryland, out towards Silver Springs, where my aunt used to live. The old headquarters before the merger was in Fairfax, and there was one in Fairfax on the Orange Line, the Vienna Station, I think it was. But and then you can go. Probably my favorite is, let's see. I think it's at Red Line now, I think. I'm trying to look at the map here. Yeah, the Red Line, I think, is the one that goes by Arlington. And they also have a Pentagon and Pentagon City Mall stops. When I was there for that was back in 2002. When we did this, I took Luke and Misty with us. Luke was only like two, so I paid for the flight for both of them. And my class was in Crystal City, which is just down the road from the Pentagon.
Ah, yeah, and Crystal City.
And Reagan, yeah. So
there's no crystals in Crystal City, though.
Yeah, no, there isn't. I guess Marianne Williamson isn't there.
There we go. I expected when I rolled into Crystal City that there would be a building that was crystal or something, you know? Like, yeah. Or just an all-glass building, but there's nothing
it's
like that.
It's just down the street from Reagan. I mean, you know, you can practically walk from the airport to where Crystal City is, so where the Reagan airport is. I'm flying to Dulles this time. But yeah, just go in there and Actually, no, I'm wrong. It's the Orange Line, I think. That goes by there. Yep. Yep. So, but there, I stopped. It was right when I was there. It was 2002. When I was there for that class, it was an IBM class, and I think that was the networking class I did there. And there was a little. I'm gonna call it this, but that's probably not what you call it in the DC area. But there's a little bodega just down the street from the hotel. And when I was in class, Misty would put Luke in the stroller and walk him down there to get stuff for lunch. And which, to be honest, she didn't really have to do that more than a couple times, but she would go down there almost every day. But then once we get back, we'd all hop on the metro and go to one stop past the Pentagon. Is Pentagon City, and it opens up right up on a mall, and there's plenty of restaurants in there, so that's where we'd usually go for dinner. And I think that mall's still there. It might not be anymore, but when we went in 2002, it was right about a year after 9/11. And on the way to dinner one day, I said, we're not going to go inside, obviously, but why don't we just get off at the Pentagon stop for a minute and walk back up? Because I knew the metro station is right by, like, you come out of the station and you look, and there's the Pentagon right there. And it is also the same side that got hit by the airplane, right? So, I took Luke and Misty up there, and they had, at that time, it's probably much more elaborate now, but they, at that time, they only had like a few signs and stuff like that, but they'd finished rebuilding the Pentagon at that point. And there's army guards on that side of the building, and they were looking through binoculars, and one of them waved at my son. He just thought that was the greatest thing ever. But yeah, the rail system is, like I said, it's really easy to get around, and I'm never lost if I have the rail map with me.
You want to hear something fucking disgusting?
Oh, I'm sure. There's still that on there.
Oh no, this is disgusting. Like this freaks me out, man. So about 9:20, I downloaded the minimal boot image of Manjaro Linux for XFCE desktop. Yeah. It took me longer to figure out how to get this laptop to boot off the USB device than it did to do the complete install of Manjaro Linux. Holy crap.
Yep.
It was just
You gotta remember the magic key combination.
Disgustingly easy.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Manjaro's easy.
I mean, the first thing when it came up on the installer, it's like, you're not connected to the internet. This isn't gonna work too well. I'm like, wait, what? So I just connected to my Wi-Fi, and then it went through, and it's like, click a few buttons, put in my password. And the only complaint I have is when the installer finished, it just stopped. Like, it just stopped and closed. And I was like, all right, let's see what happens. I'm going to reboot. And I rebooted right into Manjaro Linux. And it's beautiful. I'm like, what happened? What happened to
Linux?
Good
question.
Like, what happened to the challenge?
There is no challenge anymore, not in the installation.
I mean, I have to say, bravo, man. This thing is, it was lightning fast. I'm very surprised.
Yep.
I can't wait to play around with this and find out what other goodness there is. that Manjaro Linux.
It's been a while since I tried Manjaro. I should probably try it again. It's been a while.
I have never tried. This is my first time trying it, and just
well, based you know, Arch won't be a problem.
Yeah, I know, and I was like, well, I could just do Arch, but I was like, you know, let's just try Manjaro, and wow, beautiful, bravo, man, that was something.
Yep.
Yeah. Bye-bye, yeah. Windows.
I used it, I think the last time I used it steadily was when I still had a netbook. On that netbook, I used that one, and I also used CrunchBang a bit, too.
Well. Damn.
Which I don't even know if CrunchBang's around anymore.
That's a good question. That was one of the more minimal ones, wasn't it?
Yeah, it had. Yeah, okay. It's based on OpenBox, which means you'd love it because it's OpenBox.
Yeah, I remember.
Actually, the website's there, but you go to it. It says what was CrunchBang? So I'm like, oh. Okay.
Oh, now you got to go to CrunchBang Plus. CrunchBang Plus is
spinoff project.
After 8 years of CrunchBang Plus, you know what to expect. Still small, still fast, but now with newer packages. It's based off of Debian.
Debian 12.
Yeah. Man, I think CrunchBang was one of the things that we were looking at when we were doing Linux for Kids. I think that was one of the
could have been
possibilities. Puppy Linux is Puppy Linux still around?
I'm sure
that's a good question too. I think it is.
Yeah, it's the website's still there. It's 300 megabytes or less.
Puppy Linux. It's stupid. See, CrunchBang, I think, would do well on, like, a Pi. So, but I guess Diet Pi, you can pretty much put it together pretty quickly. Just install OpenBox and...
Oh, wait a second. Is there a... Well, there's a Raspbian version of Puppy Linux. So, there you go.
Yeah, Puppy would be a good one. Right. Heck, that CrunchBang Plus release was from June. I may have to try that. I know it's not. It's definitely not for noobs, but I'm not a noob.
Huh.
I've also thought about buying an old netbook off of eBay, but. Yeah, and here's something I discovered recently on eBay. I was going to bid on something, right? They want you to put your default payment so that if you win, they immediately charge you. Which means you better put something in there that you know will be okay. But it's like, that's the default now. It's like, really?
No, the problem with netbooks is that most of them are 32-bit.
The 32-bit, right.
Yeah. You got to really dig to find one that is 64-bit compatible.
Or maybe I can find an old HP Stream tablet, although that's probably 32-bit, too.
Yeah. I mean, sir, if you're looking for a tablet that'll run Linux, obviously, you should talk to me. But
correct.
Right. The Dell Venue 11 Pro. I mean, that's it. If you want something that reminds you of a netbook and is about the same size and actually has a proper hard fold-up keyboard.
Now, it's a little bit expensive, but one thing I thought about, which might run Linux very, very well, is the Asus ROG Ally, which is basically like this Steam Deck.
No, yeah, that one would
but
be cool.
But runs Windows.
Like all the companies are coming out with something in that style, whether it runs Windows or Linux, and I think that's awesome. And I wouldn't mind getting one. But no, if you're looking for something that reminds you of a netbook in form factor and maybe size. GPD. No, well, GPD, yes. But I would also suggest like the 1GX1.
Right.
Which has some crazy stats. I mean.
Right.
And then, yeah. The GPD also has a great line of stuff, and then there's one other company that I'm trying to remember the name of. One Notebook?
Or Pinebook Pro, I think. Is it back in stock? Let me see. This has been out of stock for a while. And the Pis are finally starting to come more in stock lately, but they are not down to their old prices. See, the Pinebook Pro has a hexa-core ROG chip, RK3399, 4 gigs of LPDDR, an M2 NVMe expansion option, 1080p IPS display, 802.11 AC, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth 5, and a bootable micro SD, and 64 gig of eMMC.
Yeah, it's actually called the One Netbook, who also makes that handheld style that you're talking about.
Right.
But if you dig a little deeper, there's like the One Netbook T1, and I think they also made Yoga.
Ooh.
One Netbook Yoga style, but I think that's older, so I can't even see it on Amazon anymore.
Pinebook Pro has a 14-inch screen and is $219.
One Mix is the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the U.S. version looks like it's the only one they're making anymore. I'm tempted to order one of those. Ooh. Because they have Manjaro for ARM version of Manjaro, which would run on that.
One Netbook, One Mix 4.
In the Yes, I should put that in the IRC too. Pinebook Pro for $219.
Well, it looks like I unplugged the wrong device.
Uh-oh.
No,
what did you unplug?
I unplugged the device that plays the music. I thought I was unplugging something different.
Oh, the one we need
different.
In a few minutes.
Yeah, I thought it was...
The one makes 2S, I think, right? Which it looks like the One Netbook website has a bad cert on it.
How the fuck did it do that?
Weird.
Oh my goodness, we gotta start packing this up. We're gonna go swimming in a while.
Any last words, people?
Words.
Let's see how bad I screwed this up. Let me.
Pizza, pizza.
I didn't screw it up. Anyway, that's good. Anything else for this week? No? All right. Well, I guess we'll see everybody here in 7 short days for the back to school special, right?
Yeah, they're already back to school here.
Yeah, my kids are already back in school.
Oh yeah, my wife's first day was today. Next week, I think the kids start on Wednesday.
I don't know when Luke starts the fall term. I don't know. Soon. I know Bachelor Night is no longer Thursdays. I don't really get a Bachelor Night anymore until next summer.
Well, there's that. Alright, I'm gonna play this out. Here you go.
I am short.
Oh my god.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
You were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
They haven't launched it yet, but in that one netbook website, they have the T1 that they're working on.
Cool.
Which looks very, very much like a Surface. It's also not cheap either. It's going to be running a 12th gen Intel Core processor. But that one netbook website has a bad cert on it right now.
Uh-oh.
Expired back in May, which tells me that maybe they're not active anymore.
Maybe.
Which would be sad.
Yep.
That's what I gotta decide what I want to take. What personal machine I want to take with me on my work trip. And right now I think the Surface is leading because it's much smaller.
So Dan, you kill all your recordings? I still see one going.
No, hold on. Say goodnight, Joel.
Goodnight, Joel.
Alright, what's up, Joseph? Is that better?
Nope, that is not better. That is absolutely 100% not my name. Never has been. On my birth certificate, it does not say that.
What's up, Joe?
Oh, not much. How's it going, Dan?
It's going.
No, the thing is, I actually was called Joey as a kid because, you know, my dad's name is also Joe, so they had to differentiate us somehow.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know that JoJo's name is Joe.
I call Corbin. So does everybody else when you guys are all in the same room.
Everybody but me. I don't call him Corbin.
It's funny how your grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Little Joe.
Little Joe.
Yeah, I was called Little Joe after I told people I didn't want to be called Joey.
Did they respect your wishes?
Yeah, yeah. They stopped calling me Joey and started calling me Little Joe, and that was perfectly fine. It was acceptable.
That's good.
I mean, there's a couple of people that, you know, you kind of expect them not to be able to change. So Grandma and Grandpa got away with it.
What, calling you Joey?
Yeah.
Little Joe.
Oh, my grandma still calls me Little Joe.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Whoa. Is your dad still alive, right?
Yeah.
And your grandma's still alive?
Yeah.
How old is she? She must be pretty old, right?
Yeah, 86.
Good for her, man. How's she doing?
She's doing good. I mean, she's outlived two husbands, but yeah, she's doing good.
Good for her.
Saw her a couple of months ago, and she was healthy.
Is she in Texas, too?
No, she's in Florida.
Oh. Now, keep out of that heat.
Yeah, yeah. My dad moved to Florida to be close to her.
Oh, that's good. When are you moving to Florida now?
Oh, when, what's his name is no longer there. What's the governor's name in Florida? I should know it.
DeSantis.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this.
When he's gone and Florida man leaves.
Florida man never leaves.
Exactly.
Dan's washing laundry.
Yeah, I should turn that off. It's going to stop in a few minutes. The hell is... I found out some
things about my 3D printer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good things or bad things?
Good. Well, if you remember right, last time I was talking about the 3D printer, it was having a problem with heat creep and clogging in the PTFE tubing. But then I just waited, and then we've had a couple of days where it hasn't been 100 degrees, and I tried printing again, and it worked fine.
Yeah, it's because it was too hot in the garage.
Yep.
That's why mine's not in the garage. Although I got a roll of glow-in-the-dark filament coming, I'm going to print as big as a skull as I can in the glow-in-the-dark filament for Halloween.
Yeah, the glow-in-the-dark filament is fun. I always enjoy printing Halloween stuff with it.
Yep. And then what I might do is get me some of those LED lights and I'm trying to think whether I want to build a box to charge it with. Well, actually I could do both, because what I could do is I could get the strip lights, put it around a box, then have a hole on top of the box that after I charge it I can hit it from the bottom with the light in the box. And for the box, I'll just probably find like I don't know, maybe I might put it together with some plywood or something like that. Or even just a cardboard box, because well, it doesn't really matter.
You're looking at what? 3.7 volt batteries, so...
Yeah.
Like 18650s or some of the lithium carbon battery or whatever they are.
Well, I want a box big enough to put the skull battery in, though. I said that means I can't 3D print it because it would be bigger than what I'm printing.
No, I'm saying that you can get the charging circuit for that for really, really cheap.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
like a dollar.
Or just get one so that I can plug in the freaking wall. Could be done.
Well, you'd be able to plug it into the wall, you know, after you had it hooked up.
Right. So I'm planning on sitting it like in amongst my pumpkins.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
I will say that the glow-in-the-dark filaments are awesome, but you really got to expose them to some light.
You do. That's why. That's why I'm thinking about.
No, if you put a light in them and then you like randomly turn the light off, it'll glow hard.
Right. That's actually, you know what? That's also another idea. I could I'm printing it with 5% infill. I probably could do less. I might try reprinting it at a smaller scale before.
Hold on. You're printing a skull, right?
Right.
Well,
it's solid. Why? Above the mouth, it is solid.
Okay. Is it a skull bowl or is it just a skull?
Just a skull.
And why not print it with zero infill and print it with four or five walls?
That's what I was going to do. I was going to try in a smaller version of it first. That way I can be sure it's going to be enough. It should be enough. I don't know why it wouldn't be enough.
Yeah. Well, you could also probably go... If you... I'm trying to think if you could potentially put a support in the middle.
Right. Well, I'm using tree supports, so...
Yeah, but tree supports won't help if you just made it 0% infill.
Inside, yeah.
Yeah, so you'd have to make... Well, like in Cura, you can choose where supports happen, so you could make a pillar right in the middle where it's like 100% infill or whatever.
Or I can use lightning infill.
Lightning infill. Yeah. No, I don't know that. Does that happen in Cura?
Yeah, it does. What happens is the bottom portion will be mostly empty, right? And then as it gets closer to the top where it actually needs the supports.
Okay, I get the idea.
Yeah, it basically will start printing from the wall and give you enough to support the top so that it doesn't fail. Then the bottom portion will be very empty.
Yeah, that would work if you printed it. Is there, because I assume there's not already a hole in the bottom. So if you printed it with if you printed it with no floor.
No, what I would
no
do
bottom.
Is, well, I could just drill a hole in it. I mean.
Well, or you could print it with no bottom.
Right. I don't know if no bottom would work because it's very. I'll just take a picture of the bottom. I made a smaller one already, and it kind of failed mostly because it lifted off the bed.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, it was almost done, and it was looking gorgeous. but then the bottom slipped off, and I looked over and I saw it move as the print head hit it. I'm like, oh crap! It was, it was looking wonderful, but now the latest Cura has a better brim supports now, not brim support adhesion. I mean,
yeah, I've been using that Arachne for a while, and it just hasn't gotten an update, the beta version.
Just go to the latest.
Yeah,
it's good.
I am going to switch to the latest. I don't think they still put those print thin walls functionality into the latest, but right now I don't need it.
Yeah.
I switched back to a 0.4 while I was trying to diagnose issues, so until I switch back to the 0.6.
And it's funny you mention that. Maybe I should take my old one and make it 0.6.
It's worked out really well.
Because
for all the time I was printing with it. It makes
it
much quicker.
I know. I don't want to necessarily do it with my newest one just because it's freaking working and I don't want to fuck it. Yeah, the other one, the other one's working too, but if I screw it up, I don't care, you know?
Right. Well, you won't screw it up by printing with a .6, or even a .8 if you're planning on printing big things.
That one can't print as big as the other one, but it's also, my other one is like, the newest one is definitely my primary, and I use it a whole hell of a lot more. I want to have it turning on in months.
Well, using the Arachne and the .6, you're not really losing much resolution at all.
Right.
So no. I do recommend that. But if you're going to go with like a .8 or a 1, then you will lose some resolution. And you use it to print bigger things that don't have a lot of detail.
Right. Yeah.
Right, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah, what he said.
Murph don't care. All he cares about is cocaine.
I hear it's good stuff.
Yeah, don't be jealous.
Yeah, he's bagging it up and heading to Ohio Linux Fest with it. And that's how he gets people to come to his presentation.
Did he get accepted?
Free samples?
Did he get accepted, though?
I have not gotten word yet. But I think so.
Why wouldn't they accept him? It's Murph.
Well, it depends.
It's very true.
I'm hoping.
So do you have a 3D printer, Murph?
I do indeed have a 3D printer.
So what do you think about using different size nozzles?
I have never tried. I've got a Lulzbot TAS-6, and I have it completely stocked. I just use the filament.
That is a nice printer.
Well, did I ever tell you guys? I actually won it from opensource.com.
Oh, well, that's cool. Really cool. Dude, you just get the luck with winning the cool prizes. Didn't you win a Pi 400, I think?
Yeah. And if I get accepted, I'll use the Pi 400 to present if it works with the video there.
Cool.
I don't think it would be a problem.
HDMI.
It's a little finicky. Sometimes when I plug it into a monitor, it doesn't always power up. Or it doesn't display or something. Something doesn't happen. It doesn't do video out.
It might boot faster than your laptop.
No, it does not.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, it ain't that fast. It's good enough that I could do the presentation on it, but it's not a speed demon. So if it cooperates, I'll do it, but I'm going to have a laptop sitting there waiting to go if it doesn't cooperate.
That makes sense.
Yep. I might try and drop down, but we'll see what I don't know what else is happening that weekend. I'm on call next week. So it's a good thing it's not next week.
I have tomorrow off, but I work Saturday and Sunday. And I was supposed to be on Mintcast on Sunday, which kind of sucks.
Wow, it does suck.
Why does Mintcast suck?
No,
my having to work on Sunday sucks.
You see, the thing is, I've got three things I want to do in September. OLF, Columbus Coffee Festival, which that's definitely something I'm doing because I paid for it. And then the day after the coffee festival is when I fly to Virginia for work. Reston, Virginia. DC. For the most part.
Where all the action happens.
Oh, I don't know about action, but...
Oh, you're going to get some action, Joel. Some satisfaction action.
Well, I know it. The only thing... It's you've done these kind of work trips before, Dan. The only thing I don't like about them is that the fact that you're on for much more than your 40 hours that week. You know, so you have, because you end up going out to dinner with your coworkers and stuff like that, and you have to keep your corporate image on. You know, you can't, like, after work, after the normal work time, relax and, you know, do not safe for work things.
You know, it's a good thing that my corporate image involves yelling at people.
There you go.
So it's perfect.
It's like I've never. Well, I've worked with most of the people that are going to be there. You know, like since before I even joined the company. All right, and so like Sunday, there's a gathering at one of the manager's houses. She used to be a support person. Definitely worked with her in the past. So,
that reminds me, I got a question for you guys.
Wait, should we start the show?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, please. This is very, it's technical from a certain perspective.
Yes.
Oh. My genitals are ready to start the show.
Wait, are they stuck to the side of your leg or something?
Wait. Speak.
Speak.
Okay. I don't know, for some reason it all of a sudden sounded clearer than it was before, and
I don't know.
Alrighty. What do we got going on? Gosh darn it.
Okay. Darn gosh it.
Gosh darn it. No. I like Control R. It makes things happen. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Now, here's going to be the $1,000 question. Is this audio going to work right out of the box? Because I didn't test it yet.
Nope.
But I'm confident that it should work. Right, Joel?
Sure.
It should. Oh, wait, what happened? This is 1015, isn't it? I should know, because I just moved all the files, but I wasn't paying that good attention.
Your script was doing the work, right?
Actually, I was just moving those by hand today. What am I doing here?
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, that's that, and then... And there. All right. Just a quick double check. Oh, shit. I got to get the stream going, too. I forgot about that. How could I forget about that?
Oh.
Everybody loves to stream these days.
And everybody loves Raymond. Ba-doom, boom.
But he's not doing the stream. We are.
Correct.
All right, there we go. Starting the stream. This is 1015. Stream has started. And here we go. Oh, man. Give me a count around, Joel.
2, 3, 1.
Okay.
And.
All right. No.
That didn't work.
Oh, nope. Duh. Yeah, that'll help if I do that. Here we go.
If you actually turn it on.